welcome to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Yvonne Crumry, and today I'm speaking with Bree Hill, a Black trans organizer in Denver and Boulder. You can't see this, but during our interview on Zoom, they wore a t-shirt that said, "I'm rooting for everyone, Black and trans." We spoke about the Black Lives Matter protests that have taken place over the last 2 weeks and what that means for people in the Front Range and what that means for the LGBT community as well.
So my name is Brianna Hill. A lot of people know me as Bree Hill. I also apologize. My allergies are flaring up. It's allergy season. So my nose is also going to be a part of this interview. But like I said, my name is Bree Hill. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. I identify as a Black, queer, non-binary individual. Did the thing at CU Boulder, got my major in ethnic studies and Black, queer, and transgender studies. Right now, I'm currently working for a nonprofit down in Denver called Project Voice. We train, employ, and organize youth of color to tackle issues in their community and create equity. I also do a lot of things in terms of organizing and activism around Black, queer, and trans lives, experiences, and just like death in general. I don't have like an organization attached to me per se, but I try to make sure that my community is being supported in every aspect. Yeah, that's what I do.
Can you just share with anyone who like may have been living under a rock for the last 2 weeks what is currently happening?
Yeah, so I'm not very good with dates or times, but during this moment right now, if people who are, you know, living underneath the rock or just like trying to get into what's happening in their lives, a lot of protesting is happening nationwide and also over the globe due to the death of George Floyd, who was a Black man who was murdered by the police. Most of the protests happened around George Floyd's death. Breonna Taylor also got murdered by police in her own home. So marches are also happening around her lives. So Breonna Taylor, George Floyd are like the two catalysts for this protest that is happening. So here in Denver, there have been protesting for about 8 days now. So at the Capitol, at the mayor's house last night, which was hilarious. They all drove their cars up to the mayor's house and just honked their horns all night. That was really funny. So yeah, that is what's happening in the world now. What most people don't know what's happening is that Tony McDay, a Black trans man, was murdered by the police as well in Tallahassee, Florida. But he was murdered by the police also. And then a couple of weeks, and I think a couple months back, Nina Pop, who is a Black trans woman, was also murdered by police. So most people don't know that like Black trans folks are being murdered as well. Black queer folks are being murdered as well. But the mainstream kind of like centers Black cis folks, Black heterosexual folks. So that's what's happening right now.
I think it's really interesting reading how mainstream media is presenting this. Cause like, yes, the protests have kicked off with the death of George Floyd, but it's really about like so many more deaths than that and so much more of a like constant systemic thing, like you said. And I've found myself getting really frustrated reading these articles that are kind of putting this all on this one moment. And that's very like essentialist. That's a very simplistic way of looking at this problem. And so to that, I've also heard a lot of people saying like, so I understand people are rioting or, you know, rioting or protesting in Minneapolis, but having that question of why is it happening elsewhere in the country. And so the obvious pushback to that is that like police brutality and systemic white supremacy is happening all over the country. Do you have any history of like how that's taken form in Denver that you want to tell us about?
I'm not a history major, but I mean, you can see it in the way that we fund things. So in Denver, we fund police way more than we fund any other thing. When you go to DPS schools, there are more police officers than there are counselors. There's just a bunch of things that happen in Denver that like relate to like systematic oppression and systematic racism that most people either like push off to the side or they don't really like focus much on it. But the thing that I know the most is that like we do fund the police more. And just because I work with Project Voice, I know that there are a lot more police officers in schools And so that leads to push out rates, that leads to, you know, the mass incarceration of young Black and brown people, the school to prison pipeline. So yeah, that's all that I know a little bit that's happening in Denver. There are tons of people in Denver who you can get more of an in-depth history lesson for. And two, they do a really great job of like laying it all out where it's like Denver is not like the pretty city that you move to from California or you move to from Texas. It is like, it is a city that needs to be like held accountable for their, you know, their actions and the way that they go about handling Black folks and people of color in general.
They continue with that thread. So not only does this matter in Denver just as much as it matters everywhere else, can you speak to how it matters to the queer community? I know you've mentioned a little bit how both Tony McDade and Nina Pop were trans folks that were killed by police. And how does that really have a call to action for the rest of the queer community, especially people who might be like cis, white, and have a lot more privilege?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look in the queer community, there are going to be Black people there. Like Black people exist everywhere. You can't go anywhere in this world where Black people don't exist. But the queer community, you know, was made and structured by Black folks and like people of color. So you look back to like Stonewall, you look back to like the gay liberation movement. There were Black people and people of color spearheading those movements. So people like Bayard Rustin, who was like Martin Luther King's right-hand man, was an outward, like, he was very gay and he got arrested for being gay. He was very unapologetic about his gayness. And he wrote the speech that Martin Luther King did on Washington. Like he was the one who did the thing. And then you have people like Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, like two trans women of color who, you know, was a part of Stonewall. They organized around Stonewall. They organized around like police brutality. And then they started STAR, which is the street transvestite. I'm blanking on the name. I think it's Street Transvestite Actionary something, but it's a house that they made for, you know, like trans people of color during those times so that they can live there. They can, you know, have their own lives. They can provide themselves with financial structure. And even people like Stormy Daveri, it's like a French last name. She's really cool. She was there at Stonewall as well. And she just like, she was one of those people who was like, if you're not with us, then you're against us. And you even have pioneers who are still alive, like Miss Major Griffin Gracie. She's still out here doing protests. She is in a wheelchair currently right now, and she's just like out there with her signs. And so they're always here to like protect the queer community. And so therefore, that's why the queer community needs to show up for Black lives, to show up for these protests, to show up for these riots, quote unquote riots. And just like acknowledge that, you know, without the works of Black people, without the works of people of color, they wouldn't have, you know, this Pride Month, they wouldn't have the luxuries that they have now. So it's like marriage or, you know, being able to like label yourself as gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender, et cetera.
I think one, the big kind of central conversation around this is white supremacy and also just, and we talked about this a little bit in Denver specifically, but police presence and police practices. And as the queer community has evolved and progressed in some ways and earned more validity in society, we've seen like a very different change of relationships with police. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look back to the days of Stonewall, police were brutalizing the ever-living crap out of a lot of queer people. And now we have police at Pride. And so I'm wondering, what are your kind of thoughts on that shift and what is the cost of that?
I think it's absolutely a failure to like the queer community, just because like during Stonewall and even like before Stonewall, cops were, you know, arresting people who quote unquote cross-dressed or arresting people who were holding hands with the same gender. Like cops were never here for us. And the fact that they, you know, they exist as Pride, they have their own float. Like cops are always there at Pride, making sure that people are safe, quote unquote, but they're still policing like other bodies that are darker than white people. So I think that it's a huge failure on our part to like allow cops back into our community when we've like actively tried to push them out. Cops don't do anything for our community besides just regulate how we perform and just push like heteronormative practices, cisnormative practices on us. I don't like cops. That's just one thing. That's the reason why I don't go to Pride anymore. is because there are a ton of cops there, and I don't feel comfortable being, you know, like a Black person putting my body like on the line to like accept and like celebrate my identity. So I don't go to Pride. I also like hesitate to go to different spaces where there are cops there, where it's like, oh, come to this nightclub, but there's like a ton of cops there, or oh, come to this event, there's like security guards there. It just doesn't help us in this matter. It just only like holds us back, and it then like it progresses the people who already have privilege, who already have like these pleasures, these luxuries, a little bit up more, like against all of us.
Right on. And so I think you spoke a lot to how Denver funds police more than any other thing that we do, more than our education, more than the betterment of the future of Denver. What would a city like Denver or America as a whole look like if we defunded the police and rerouted that money elsewhere?
Oh man, we would actually have counselors for our students in schools. We would actually have, you know, enough materials and support to like fund DPS schools, like public schools instead of private schools. We would be able to fix highways faster. We would be able to, you know, support our houseless people, our homeless people who are at like the city capital every day. Like they have been pushed out of their houses. They don't have any financial, you know, support. And so they like live like at City Park. We would have the funds to like put them in houses or tear down buildings that like we don't need anymore. There's like a multitude of possibilities to do if we didn't fund the police. Like the prison system would be abolished because the police wouldn't be like, you know, arresting people left and right just for random things or for minor things, but because of the color of their skin, they get a longer prison sentence or a longer jail sentence. So I think that, you know, an abolitionist's dream is to have less money to police or even no police at all, and then like no prisons or like reform or like restorative justice instead of just locking people up. So I feel like Denver could do a bunch of things if we didn't fund the police all the time. We could even have, you know, COVID-19 tests for literally everyone. I don't know. It's still happening. We're still in a pandemic. Who knows?
Yeah. Protective equipment for healthcare workers since they're wearing garbage bags.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you look at any city in any state, we fund the police way more than we fund necessary things that like are needed for our survival. So like if you go to Atlanta, if you go to New York, if you go to California, the police department are always getting the larger chunk of the pie.
You're listening to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Yvonne Crumry, and today I'm speaking with Black trans activist Bree Hill about the protests that have taken place nationwide over the last 2 weeks, as well as what Black Lives Matter means for the queer community. And so for some people in this audience that have never really considered a world without as much or any police, what are some ways you've seen societies that don't have access to justice with the police, that only have access to police as a negative entity, how do they live without police? Like how do they like police themselves or create justice within their communities?
I mean, like for me, I would call my neighbors before I called the police. I would call my mom before I called the police. I know that in some instances, like people would call their local barbershops before they called the police because they're quicker and they're more effective. And instead of, you know, calling the police to like kill someone, they would call their local barbershop or like their local, you know, friends, their support systems to like have a conversation around this, to like hold this person accountable for like the reasons that they did it, but still like not punish them right after, like find resources, find different alternatives to have this conversation with someone instead of just like putting them in handcuffs and then putting them behind bars. So I feel like we as a community can police ourselves. We do it a lot when it comes to like, when you take like misgendering, like if you see someone misgender someone, people are like, whoa, hey, like you shouldn't misgender this person. This is why. If we did that for like police where it's like, whoa, hey, maybe don't call 911 really quickly. Maybe let's talk about who we can call next. Like, I know your dad works for this law firm. Like, can he, you know, come out here and like talk about like their rights or something? Or I know your mom works really well with like restorative justice practices. Or I know your uncle is really well with just like, you know, holding someone down and like calming them down. Or your cousin can fight. Call your cousin. I don't know. One of those things, like if we take practices that we already do now as like inherent behavior, instead of calling the police. There's just, we could end so many things. So many things.
And you spoke to this earlier, the fact that a lot of Black and brown folks get way worse sentences and get way worse treatment for similar like crimes or similar practices. I wondered, like, how does that take the form in a place like Colorado where weed culture is like very propped up and it's this whole thing and now it's legal, but we're looking at other places in the country and still here where there are Black and brown people still in prison for marijuana possession. Mm-hmm. How do you say that that, like, I'm not asking a real question. How do you say that Denver has like a specific kind of culture that fuels all of these white supremacist power structures?
It's like a two-sided coin where it's like, depending on what shade of color skin you have, it depends on how like bad we're going to punish you. So we have a ton of dispensaries, a ton of, I don't know what they're called. I'm allergic to weed. So I'm just like, I just drive by them and I'm like, hey, Green Cross, I think that's weed. I don't know. But we have a ton of like those shops where it's like white owners own this place and like only white people go there and the police seem to be doing fine with it. Or like white people can smoke in Denver and walk around in public and the police don't really bat an eye. But when you see like a Black person smoking weed or, you know, even like a brown person like engaging in marijuana activities, they're like, oh, it's like the inherent, like, oh, you're a criminal because of the color of your skin. So therefore, like, I can punish you harder. And also you have like a joint in your head. And that's even more so where it's like, oh, you have a joint in your hand and you're Black. Yeah, just get in the car. Just going to take you down the precinct. It's just, I don't know. We have like a very like double-sided view on how we do things. And it even happens with like drugs in general, where it's like, if you see a white person like taking acid or shrooms or Molly, like they are just like, oh, well, so white people do, I guess. But like when Black people engage in it, they're like, ah, oh, nah, can't do that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've seen evidence already during these protests of like people of different races getting arrested protesting for breaking curfew or whatever. And I saw one where like a white dude had $100 bail set. And then there was an Asian person who had like $300 bail set, and then a Black person had $500 bail set. And it's like, mm-hmm. for the same night, for the same exact crime, and it says it in the document. And it's like, even among protesting, police brutality and racial profiling and white supremacy, like they can't even play it cool then. It's like currently happening with the protests.
It's so ingrained in the way that America was made, like COINTELPRO, like three-fifths a person, sharecropping, segregation, like it has ingrained America, the United States, into what we are now. So history will always repeat itself unless we like tear all the pages out or burn the book. So it's whatever you do, whatever you like engage in, you're always going to have a larger sentence than someone who is white, than someone who has more privilege. Because it happens kind of in the same like community. So like if you identify as Black and another person identifies as Black, but they are like wealthy class, like middle class, upper class, higher class, but you're like low class, like poor, like in those, you have a higher sentence than someone who has money. So it always like revolves around access. It always revolves around privilege. It always revolves around, you know, what you can bring to the table and like how you can benefit white supremacy.
So I know this is like a larger conversation, and especially with this current wave of protests and this current wave of unrest about police brutality, it seems like a lot more people who've always remained out of it are being called into the conversation. I mean, that's just me. I know it's my personal life, like people on social media that like have never spoken out about this are now suddenly saying something. So what can we do with all this energy towards working towards this? Like, what are the next steps? I know that's a really big question and a lot for one person to answer, but.
Yeah, I would say for me, like, keep that same energy. Like, these protests, these riots are, like, going to, like, stop sooner or later. But when they do stop, like, that energy still needs to keep going. Like, whether that means that you stand up for your coworker, or you push your job to have more like people of color represented in your company, or you like show up for like racial injustices or microaggressions. Like, I wish I had a shirt that said keep that same energy, because I really like do, like I will come across a bunch of people who are like, yeah, I was at the protest, I did all these things, and I'm like, great, like what are you doing? Like, are you donating to organizations? Are you like, are you reading books to like unlearn your racial bias? Like, what are you doing to keeping that same energy so that I don't have to do all the work? And most of the time they drop the energy. They're like, great, the protest is over, the riots are over, we won like maybe one victory that still like doesn't solidify like the work that we've done for like these past weeks. And people are like, well, I'm just gonna go over here and enjoy my life. And it's like, no, there are a ton of people who are getting killed every day by police. There are a ton of Black trans folks who are living in this world without resources, and they really do need resources. Like Tony McDay was a Black trans man who didn't have enough resources to like survive. Like he was going through a lot of suicide ideations. He was dealing with like getting beat up by his community. And even recently there was a Black trans woman, Ayanna Dior, who got beat up in Minneapolis, the state where, you know, George Floyd got murdered, by a group of Black cis hetero men. And it's like, these resources need to be provided nonstop for everyone, but mainly for Black people, mainly for Black trans people, mainly for Black queer people, because we're at the bottom of the barrel. Like, it's the scraps that people don't really like pay attention to. So I would just say, keep the same energy. These protests and these riots are going to stop, but, you know, start donating to the organizers that you had a conversation with at the protest. Start, you know, challenging your friends and your family. That's like where the most integral change happens, is when you start changing from the inside. And just try to like change yourself. There's a lot of things that people can do work on. I know I'm still working on things myself. No one is perfect. No one is like this ideal perfect human being who like fights for everyone. But you can get there one day when we all start doing the work and start reading. So
this needs to be a long-term sustained commitment. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't take a video circulating of a Black man being killed to have this energy.
Yeah, I feel like that's when I like look on my Facebook, they're like, I can't believe this happened. And I'm like, we've had like thousands of Black people getting killed videos, but this is the one that called you to action. Cool.
Yeah, that's definitely really frustrating. I could see that for sure. I mean, we've been having conversations with our youth about this in the youth groups. And one thing that I think a lot of people find really discouraging is that I feel like we were having these same conversations in St. Louis when Michael Brown was killed and when Tamir Rice was killed, and over again, like what can we do to make this time different? And I can imagine that takes a lot less energy for me to be sad about when I think of it versus someone living that reality all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know if I have any more questions for you. Is there anything you wish I'd asked or you want to speak more to?
I feel like the only thing I would like talk on is like, if if you're protesting or you're in spaces where like people are protesting, make sure that like the voices of Black queer and Black trans people are, you know, being uplifted in like the same way for like people of color. So like, make sure that like queer people of color and queer trans people of color, like their voices and their experiences are being uplifted. Because it never fails. Like every protest, every riot, every, you know, movement that we have, it always kind of gets taken over by like the cishet agenda, quote unquote, instead of like involving all people. And people just have like this double-sided coin where it's like, oh, I need to be here for Black lives and protests. But on the other side, it's like, I don't really know much about Black trans people, Black queer people, like the experiences that they like go through. So I would just say that like, do your research, know who like, you know, these spearheads are, know your history, both your Black history, your history of color, and your queer and trans history. And just always try to like involve everyone instead of like centering one specific identity, because there are a ton of different identities within one. So it's never like a end-all be-all type of conversation.
If not now, then when? If not today, then why make your promises? a love declared for days to come is as good as none. Till morning comes, you can wait for the new day. You can wait and lose this heart. You can wait and soon be sorry. 'Cause if not now, then when?
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Yvonne Crumry, and today you heard my conversation with Black trans activist Bree Hill about the recent Black Lives Matter protests in Denver, Boulder, and everywhere on the Front Range, as well as nationwide, and what Black liberation means for the queer community and why it's necessary. If you'd like more information about today's show, please visit kgnu.org/outsources. And if you have any questions or concerns, please email us at outsources@kgnu.org. As always, please tune in next Monday at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Thank you.